Welcome, everyone, to the Peaceful Planet Show. This is your host, Marcia McMahon, coming to you live today. We are so honored to have a wonderful guest. It's a real thrill to bring on Ed Mitchell of the Apollo 14 mission and the book that he has written, The Way of the Explorer. And you were listening to some music that was actually a mix by Chris Moores. And the music is being synthesized from spirit through the mediumship of Bob Murray. And the music was titled The Peaceful Planet, which is our theme song. I hope you heard the lyrics. I'm writing the lyrics as a medium with John Lennon. And we have some other interesting messages and lyrics that perfectly fit with our special guest. And I'm going to be featuring some of that music at the start of the show. and then reading some lyrics and messages as we work into this interview. But we ask all of our listeners to stay tuned because this is going to be absolutely a riveting interview with one of the most incredible guests who has integrated his expertise in science and his experience on the Apollo missions with his vast knowledge of spirituality. And it's just such a pleasure to have you on the show, Dr. Mitchell.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
All right. So we're going to, at the start of the show, play a song titled Remarkable Nebulae to honor our guest. And then we're going to read the lyrics when we get back. So stay tuned and stay with us. It's going to be an absolutely fascinating interview with Dr. Mitchell.
Not hearing a thing, by the way.
I'm not either. It's Don, you'll have to look for Remarkable Diana. That's the same tune as Remarkable Nebulae. I don't know what's going on. And you were listening to Remarkable Nebulae as synthesized from spirit through Bob Murray at thestarsstillshine.com. And I'd like to briefly read the lyrics that go along with this because it's so completely perfect for our guest today. And it's describing it, well, it's intergalactic music that's being created by Bob. And it's the words are channeled from John Lennon in spirit. And these are the words to Remarkable Nebulae. Remarkable in every way perfect, the nebulae are shining bright beyond the sun. Beyond the sun and stars are nebulae shining deep within the center of the cosmos. They are shining away. creating life and lives within a universe of time, far away from us, yet close enough to see that there is more, so much more, than we could ever dream possible. Imagine that. We see something 500 million years ago, shining in the star clusters at night, remembering 500 million light years away, a speck of stardust shining out, shining for me and for you, a way of looking up and seeing the stars shining away in time, distant time and places within our system and beyond, remarkable in every way perfect. That is how they shine forevermore. So on that note, I want to warmly welcome you, Dr. Mitchell, to the Peaceful Planet. Am I coming in clear for you?
Yes, it's weak, but I can hear you. Thank you.
Okay, all right. So if I may, I'd like to read your very impressive bio and talk about your websites and some of your projects, and then we'll launch into some of the questions about the book.
Okay.
And the name of the book is The Way of the Explorer. It's the revised edition, subtitled An Apollo Astronaut's Journey Through the Material and Mystical World by Dr. Edgar Mitchell. And this is Dr. Mitchell's bio. And by the way, if you're listening to BBS right now, you can go to Station 1 and you can click on Dr. Mitchell's website at www.edmitchell.com. And there's a picture of him and his moonwalk, and this is a fantastic book. But before we get to the book, I'd like to read his bio. On January 31, 1971, Navy Captain Dr. Edgar Mitchell embarked on a journey into outer space that resulted in becoming the sixth man to walk on the moon. The Apollo 14 mission was NASA's third manned lunar landing. The historic journey ended safely 9 days later on February 9, 1971. It was an audacious time in the history of mankind. For Mitchell, however, the most extraordinary journey was yet to come. As he hurtled earthward toward the abyss between the two worlds, Mitchell became engulfed in a profound sensation, a sense of universal connectedness. He intuitively sensed that his presence, that is of his fellow astronauts, and that of the planet in the window were all part of a deliberate universal process, and that the glittering cosmos itself was in some way conscious. The experience was so overwhelming, Mitchell knew his life would never be the same. Scientist, test pilot, naval officer, astronaut, entrepreneur, author, and lecturer, Dr. Mitchell's extraordinary career personifies humankind's eternal thrust to widen its horizons as well as its inner soul. His academic background includes a Bachelor of Science in Industrial Management from Carnegie Mellon University, a Bachelor of Science from the U.S. Naval Postgrad School, and a Doctor of Science in Aeronautics and Astronautics from MIT. In addition, he has received honorary doctorates in engineering from New Mexico State, the University of Akron, Carnegie Mellon, and an SED from Emory Riddle University. So, what a bio, and welcome to the Peaceful Planet Show. It's a great honor to have you on today, and your work is fascinating.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
I want to start off, of course, with this very eloquent description that you have here of the in the beginning of the bio where you describe the earthward bound state as you were staring out of the mission there, out of the capsule, and how that impacted you, because that seemed to be a sort of an apex moment of your life.
Yes, that is true. It was many of the folks that have expressed similar sorts of experiences. We all express it perhaps in a slightly different way, but it's largely the magnificent, let's call it the overview effect or the big picture effect of seeing Earth as a tiny little planet in the heavens and in the cosmos, framed by the stars. And in my particular case, we were on the way home. My job as lunar module pilot, which had to do with managing the lunar spacecraft and the lunar service activities was largely complete, successfully completed, and so I had a little more time to look out the window and look at the heavens and then my compadres. And we were oriented such that, and rotating to keep thermal balance on the spacecraft, such that every 2 minutes, a picture of the Earth, the Moon, the Sun, and a 360-degree panorama of the heavens appeared in the spacecraft window. And that was just overwhelmingly magnificent, particularly since in space, without the atmosphere, intervening atmosphere, the stars are 10 times as bright and 10 times as numerous as you can possibly see from Earth on the highest mountain on the clearest night. And I suddenly realized that the molecules in my body and the molecules in the spacecraft were manufactured in ancient generation of stars, which is how we know matter is manufactured by our star systems. And instead of being intellectual knowledge, it was suddenly deep, visceral, emotional knowledge that those were my molecules in those stars. And there was a sense of connectedness and ecstasy and something I had never, ever experienced before. And only after I came home and did research did I discover that in the ancient Sanskrit that such an experience was called salvakalpa samadhi, and discover that in every culture in all history these types of experiences were in the culture and in the lore. They might have been a different name or described differently, but in essence, they were these types of transformative experiences, which there's no going back. Once you experience those types of things, it's a life-changing sort of thing. The Greeks, in their language, called the agape or agape, depending on
agape, yeah,
how you pronounce it, as a change of mind, change of heart, a transformational experience. And, but in the ancient Sanskrit, 5,000 years ago, it was called samadhi.
Samadhi is how I've heard it. Yeah,
it just turned out to be a very powerful experience.
That is so amazing. And I can't imagine how that was for you to visually experience that grandeur, that of seeing all the stars without the filter of Earth's atmosphere and seeing it in a 360-degree way. You're very eloquent in the way you describe that experience in the book. And I had a similar experience while I was on an airplane once, where I looked out and was looking out the window and saw the cities below and all the lights and the stars at night and the lights below. And it was similar but nowhere near, I think, the grandeur that you were seeing. But I was overwhelmed with a sense of infinite intelligence, is what I would call the Creator, God, the universe. We all have different names, but I love the way you have such an appreciation of mysticism, and you're a rare individual for having branched out into the scientific study of the mystical state and the psi phenomenon, and really, in I guess your whole life has really been devoted to the understanding of the relationship between science and spirituality.
Well, yes, indeed, at least since that experience in motion. And there's a history to that, which I'll recite very briefly. Until 400 years ago, in the Western world at least, into 400 years ago, the Inquisition was burning intellectuals at the stake for disagreeing with the Church. And it was René Descartes in the late 16th century that came to the conclusion that body, mind, physicality, spirituality belong to different realms of reality and didn't interact. And that was called the Cartesian duality. And its positive side was to get the Inquisition off the backs of the intellectuals of the period so and quit burning them at the stake. But the downside was that it resulted in the studies of mind or consciousness or such things being relegated to the realm of religion and philosophy and spirituality, having nothing to do with science. So that for 400 years, science hasn't even broached the subject of why are we conscious at all and what is consciousness. And it was clear to me in space that we're the first generation of spacefarers. and that humans have asked these questions about our relationship to the cosmos forever, and that we, the first generation of spacefarers of our planet, probably ought to re-ask some of these deep questions again, and particularly those of us with a science bent, to ask this question about why are we conscious and what kind of experience is it that we're experiencing here. And that was really the motivation factor for me, and the fact that here was a subject matter that was fundamental to we humans in the modern period, but was really a no-no subject for science.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't think that was appropriate at all.
I think that that is such a worthy goal of a lifelong devotion that you've had to understanding that relationship. And while I take it from reading your book that you are still relatively grounded in all the latest scientific theories, and you accept some aspects of psi phenomena and dismiss others, and that's only natural, as an intuitive, I have to tell you, it wasn't easy for me to read some of the chapters on the science, but I did manage to get through all of it and thought it was just great reading as well. There's no one else like you that has really done this kind of thing. Others may talk about it, what the bleep covered the ideas, I think, but it's really emerging into the popular culture now, but you were doing this way before it was ever popular.
Well, thank you very much. Yes, it is coming into the popular culture, and we are seeing a renewed interest, and particularly in science. And thanks to quantum mechanics, we have just in the last 10 years started to find new ways to express these realities within science. And it turns out that all of the so-called paranormal, and I don't like that word because it's not para at all. It's very normal and natural.
I feel the same way about any of that.
And
yeah.
It's rooted right in quantum mechanics. Now that we are starting to understand that subject and bringing it out of the dogma of the 20th century that said quantum mechanics really only pertains to subatomic matter. It doesn't have anything to do with us or our scale size, which just turns out to be dead wrong. That's just not right at all.
Very interesting.
Now that we're starting to break that dogma, we're finding powerful new ways to express these ideas and making a part of our modern scientific study.
Well, you know, that's really interesting, and I'm going to ask you to elaborate on that, but the way I'm reading what you're saying is that there's a relationship between mind and matter, spirit and matter, and that relationship is energy. I know nothing really about quantum mechanics except what I've read casually, and so you're saying that some of the latest research that they're doing actually corroborates that people that are psychics are accessing this information that is everywhere.
Well,
so
as far as I'm
really
concerned, we're on the path to fully explaining all of these types of perception of information.
Mm-hmm.
The real thing here that's novel is the area, the fundamental properties of quantum mechanics that we're interested in are properties called entanglement, coherence, non-locality, and resonance.
Mm-hmm.
And it really means, this non-local property really means that when particles are entangled and subsequently go across the universe from each other, they maintain an instantaneous correlation and that cannot be screened by our normal electromagnetic screening devices. And we show over and over, have done it through thousands of experiments with people in Faraday cage chambers that isolate electromagnetic signals, that is the psychic phenomenon or the relationship between parents and children, lovers, twins, and so forth, goes across Faraday cage barriers, and that's called non-locality. And
mm-hmm.
This is precisely the properties that we're looking at. And all of these intuitive functions, I prefer to think of, or I think of, we call in the English language our intuition our sixth sense. And it really isn't. It should be called our first sense because it's rooted right in quantum entanglement, which was around long before this planet or ourselves our solar system is even round. And it's just the most fundamental part of our perception that goes right down to the very, very basis of how we perceive anything at all. And so that's where we should be starting, not where we ended up.
Wow, was that brilliant. And, you know, I, as a psychic, I have the gift of intuition, and I do work with those on the other side, or whatever you want to call it, collective consciousness. And, you know, it makes perfect sense, because the more we are tuned into our intuition, I think the more highly creative we can be, whether we are artists like myself or scientists, and that we can gather information that is otherwise unavailable, and that information can be very helpful to others.
Well, that's the whole point here, is that what we're realizing, and I've helped kind of be on the forefront of doing some of this, that a way to look at it, a way that I've postulated to look at it,
mm-hmm.
is that our existence is about matter. We are material. Our bodies
mm-hmm.
are material. And that is simply compressed energy. At the bottom of it, the Einstein special relativity demonstrates that matter has an energy equivalent. Well, but information, which is just patterns of energy, is how we know anything. And there are many types of information, and this quantum information is kind of the latest for it that we really are starting to discover. And that is the most basic. And the so-called intuitive functions and psychic functions are really rooted in this quantum non-local property of nature. And we're just now really starting to be able to understand and exploit that and to develop it as a scientific tool.
Well, that is a brilliant explanation, Dr. Mitchell. And I can't wait to replay this recording. It's going to be archived, and we're going to provide you with a free copy as well. But that is so cool. That is just so cool that you're on the cutting edge still with all of this research. Now, I really enjoyed reading your book and getting into the information that you started your psychic experiments actually in a clandestine way when you were on the Apollo 14, right?
Yes, I became interested. I became interested when I was at the early part of my work with NASA,
mm-hmm.
and became interested in J.B. Ryan's work at Duke University, and realized that if his experiments were as valid as they seemed to be, that we in science were really missing it in not utilizing this to understand ourselves better. And so, yes, I did try ESP experiment from space. It worked about the same way it did in the laboratory, same results, demonstrating that the distance didn't have anything to do with it. And so that I kept going with that, and fully realizing that as I had developed the Institute of Noetic Sciences and its work there, that we were dealing with quantum properties of nature, and that's turned out to be correct. And the work in the last 10 or 12 years has really showed how that mechanism works. For example, those who have studied any mysticism know that in the ancient stories, in the ancient records, they had something called the Akashic Records, which meant that...
I was just going to bring that up, because that corresponds to...
That nature doesn't really lose its experience.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have discovered now something called quantum holography that seems to be the explanation and the mechanism for exactly how that is true. And Rupert Sheldrake came up with some wonderful work about animals and species-dependent memory. He called it morphogenetic fields. Well, the quantum hologram precisely is the mechanism that allows that to be true. And so we're starting to understand these types of informational phenomenon quite well now.
Yes, I was just going to mention the Akashic Record, because to me that sounds like what you're describing also in your book as the zero point or the non-local information.
Yeah.
And I have done a little bit of work with the Akashic Records for myself with some past life regression, and also in some of the readings I'm sometimes able to access it. But it's not something that one takes lightly, because I guess they contain everything.
Well,
it's
basically
very vast.
Yeah, what it appears to be, it comes right out of the discovery by Max Planck in the end of the 19th century that all matter is continuously radiating photons of energy. Now, it was initially thought that these were just random emissions, but we have more recently discovered that they're quantum entangled and carry information about the physical object, and it is carried into the so-called zero-point field, which means it goes on operating even down to 0 degrees Kelvin. And so what we have here is a very powerful mechanism, and it is indeed seems to be true that nature doesn't lose its experience. And when we tap into such things as past life regressions, it's very likely that's what you're picking up, is the record, the holographic record, that mm-hmm. is resident, that is created during the lifetime of whatever individual you're talking about.
Yeah, that's just so brilliant that you're tying all this together and applying solid scientific evidence and research to all this, and you know, of course,
it's a lot of fun. I've sure enjoyed the work over the years doing this.
Yeah, I bet you have, and you've had some real weird experiences. For instance, I wanted to mention Uri Geller and Norbu Chen and some of the early work you did. I thought that was really bizarre, and wondered if you'd elaborate on that a little bit.
Well, it was interesting that I kind of had my nose rubbed in all sorts of strange incidents right after I came back from space with very credible people like Norbu Chen and healing my mother, and then running into Uri Geller and working with him with some other scientists for some time, and finding all of this under proper laboratory conditions was what could be well documented. And that is what we did. So it was fun.
Well, you know, the spoon bending and some of the materialization of objects that Uri Geller is known for, I guess we're really being pioneered by you at that time. You were the one.
Yes, I have a number of those still in my safe from those days that were very compelling. It's not good science, but it's awfully interesting. It is awfully indicative.
And then Norbu Chen, was he the guy that was able to heal your mom for a while?
Yes, he healed my mom. And then because of her Christian bent, very fundamentalist Christian bent, and he was Buddhist, and she suddenly rejected the healing for fear it was satanic. And quite interesting to observe that here for a week she had perfect eyesight, for it had been 2200 was her normal perception beforehand, and all of a sudden she had to get her glasses again. Now, she didn't get her glaucoma back, I'm pretty sure, but she rejected her healing, and thus she couldn't see. But and she had to get her glasses back. But by the time she passed on 10 years later, being a very intelligent woman, she realized that, well, if I rejected it, maybe I can get it back. And sure enough, before she passed away 10 years later, her eyesight was almost back to normal with from her own efforts of getting back to normal from after being healed and rejecting the healing. Quite an interesting story.
So, you know, you mentioned the Christian fundamentalist religion, and in much of my work that I do on the peaceful planet, I try to bring the idea of unity and oneness and the oneness of all religions, and I see that you've got that running through all of your work.
Yes.
And it's brilliant.
What I have found is that in digging into the history, the cultural history of most civilizations, that somewhere back in the aboriginal areas of those cultures, whether it be whether they call them shaman, witch doctors, medicine men, or whatever, that there is a record of these type of transcendental experiences or transcendent experiences like you and I have experienced. But when you try to explain it and to put it into the words of the language, it becomes something different, and so the explanation is different in every culture.
Right.
So religion is our explanation of a cultural explanation of a transcendental type of experience.
Mm-hmm.
and we fight over whose religion and whose experience is the best one and whose God the best one, when in reality, at the root of all our traditions and all of these transcendental experiences is the notion of love and brotherhood and connectedness.
Absolutely. And, you know, that follows in a theme that I do in my teaching. I teach for a university and I teach art history. And I talk about the ancient Sumerians and Ur, and Abraham being from Ur. And then I do mention, too, that basically one has to understand that all the religions have validity. And I think that's still shocking to a lot of people.
That's right.
But it's true. They all have truth in them. I mean, even if you look
They've
at
all
them,
been rooted in the same thing, but we humans tend to mess them up with our egos.
Mm-hmm. And for instance, the mystical experiences of Muhammad, the prophet, are written down, and now they're followed as if this is some kind of a law, whereas these were mystical experiences that he had.
Yeah.
For instance, when he ascended to heaven and spoke with Jesus, Muhammad, and Moses, well, that would seem to tend toward unity among the three great world religions, but yet people see that, you know, on a physical plane as a source of division. They've got the Dome of the Rock over there, and only Muslims can visit. So, you know, there's a lot of different interpretations that get in the way, but I think you're a pioneer in another sense, because all throughout The Way of the Explorer, your book, you've got that theme of these mystical, you know, experiences are throughout mankind. So that's really commendable. We need more people like you.
Well, all we can do is, you know, take what we've learned and try to make it helpful and applicable to as many people as want to tune into it. But it seems to be working. It seems to work, be working in a greater measure now. And we seem to be getting away from our previous, in many ways, previous dogmas, and being a little more open-minded. And particularly now, since the pictures from the Hubble telescope are starting to show us pictures of the universe that are so mind-blowing and so distant and different.
Aren't they, though?
Than we have ever seen before, and helping us to see ourselves in a totally different way, to see our place in the universe in a totally different way, that you can't just ignore what's going on there. It's utterly incredible.
Isn't it, though? I've seen those pictures. They were posted on one of our VBS show hosts' website, and I'll have to ask Don who posted them, but they are phenomenal. And so I don't know how we're getting them all. Because I guess the magnification and so on, but it seems like we're looking at other galaxies and so on.
Well, we are looking at galaxies and galaxies, galactic clusters, and so far away, so incredibly far away, that it's pushing the limit of what we really thought was the universe, that we're really going beyond what was the original definition of the universe. It's very incredible.
And those pictures are works of art and really magnificent, too. You know, I want to ask you a little bit about some of the things that are going on possibly in our solar system.
In what, please? I didn't get that.
In our solar system.
Okay.
I have seen on the NASA channel, and as well in some of my messages from the higher realms, if you want to call it that, some information has come to me that there are extensive solar flares that are sort of heating up the Earth at this point, and I've got information that this could be signs of an impending sort of solar, a lot of solar activity that could result in some kind of catastrophe. A lot of people are talking about 2012 as an end date. Do you see anything like that going on in our solar system?
I don't. It's a little early to be saying that. Yes, there's things going on in our solar system, but our sun is a fairly mainstream star and seems to be proceeding along the line of mainstream stars. And yes, it has a finite lifetime, but it's still got a few billion years to go, 3 or 4, maybe 5 billion years, before it starts to threaten Earth. But there's no doubt that from time to time there are solar flares and things that change the flux of energy on Earth, and we can experience that from time to time, and we may be experiencing some of that right now. I'm not really concerned with what the sun is going to do, because We can't do much about that. What we can do, though, is the things that we've helped cause, and we help make the climate change condition worse just by our own activities.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the things to be concerned about.
I concur with your thoughts about that, and I read the epilogue to your book, which was written sometime later, and it was just yesterday that I finished reading that last epilogue where you were mentioning peak oil, and it was just yesterday that oil peaked out at, you know, $139 a barrel. So this to me seems to be contributing to a lot of the global warming. But I had to ask you about the solar flares because I've even seen it on NASA, you know.
Well, I don't think we're in any danger at the moment from the solar flares.
You don't feel that we're in danger?
Yeah.
Because I've heard that some people in science circles feel that we could be in danger. And that,
well, it's always
some
possibility
plans are being
because
made.
We don't know. We simply don't know the answer.
You don't see that. Okay. Well, that's reassuring because I've had other psychics on, too, that have said that the sun would just possibly sort of bleep out in 2012 and become a black hole, and that was due to some of the galactic energies that were coming in that were aligning in the Aquarius configuration, supposedly aligning with what is known as galactic center, which is supposedly a black hole. Is that all correct? I mean,
I don't
is a black
put much
hole?
Stock in that, frankly.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, good. I mean, I'm reassured by that because I know you know all about that sort of thing. But, you know, you get different things in New Age circles and you get different things in science circles. And one of my interests is to correlate the two to see if is there any
mm-hmm.
corroboration between one and the other. And, of course, I'm going to trust your word on that. That's
well, I have to admit, I don't delve too much into, I stay with the science, I don't delve too much into metaphysical predictions. But
mm-hmm.
As far as I'm concerned, we're on a fairly good course at this point.
Mm-hmm. Well,
that's
very reassuring.
We humans, we have... We've overused our supply of natural resources, our renewable supply, so we have a real sustainability problem, but it's of our own doing, not due to the solar system or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to ask you, too, about some of the other controversies, such as the planet X and whether there is a Nibiru that is
I'm sorry, I'm having a little trouble hearing that one.
I wanted to ask you about one of the other controversial theories about Nibiru and whether that is from the Sirian star system and whether it does rotate into our system. Do you know anything about that?
I'm sorry, I don't really know what you're referring to.
Oh, well, just the theories on Planet X, that they have seen a Planet X that's been sighted and the theory is...
Oh, well, there may be some remote planets, but they're not really a book. Concern at this moment that I'm,
mm-hmm.
but I know.
And so some people, I think it's Zachariah Sitkin says that Planet X is approaching, and that it may interfere with Earth, and that could have something.
Yeah,
to do
that's
with
pretty far fetched. I know.
Yeah,
that pretty well.
I kind of feel the same way about that one.
Yeah.
But anyway, I just wanted to cover that with you and get your scientific opinion because I'm always looking at all of these things.
Okay.
Where did I want to go next? There's just so much in your book, and it's just really so full of great scientific insights and spiritual wisdom. What are you doing with the noetic sciences and ions these days?
Well, they are very active at the moment in working on the sustainability issue and the notion of transformation and recognizing that we need to get ourselves thinking in these areas of the positive benefits of transformation and accepting our responsibility for what we're doing to Earth and to each other,
mm-hmm.
and realizing that we can no longer continue to enjoy our warfare and our killing each other the way we do because
mm-hmm.
it is simply not the path that we can pursue on this planet and continue to survive.
Mm-hmm. I know. I completely concur with that, hence the title of the show, The Peaceful Planet, and bringing oneness and unity is a very important thing, and I commend you for having had that philosophy about ions. Let me ask you, are they still doing the psi experiments out there with various psychics at
well,
ions?
Well, yes, but not... yes, we're doing that, but we think we've covered that waterfront pretty well,
mm-hmm.
and there's not a lot of... there is work going on, but we're really more concerned right now with the transformational work and the work at getting ourselves on a path, a sustainable path on the earth.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's extremely important. And you know, so many people are interested in that and trying to go green in every way. And then, of course, the oil crisis is really forcing us.
That's pushing us into another form of crisis, which is going to push our economic system off balance. And food prices are going to rise as we compete with oil price, creating fuel for our automobiles if we try to do it with vegetarian means.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. And oil, I don't know, but I've sometimes thought that maybe digging deep into the Earth's crust like that may be contributing to some of the shifting that we're seeing with the earthquakes.
I'm sorry, I couldn't quite get that.
I'm not a geologist, I don't know, but I've sometimes wondered if the digging that deep into the earth with the oil and removing it is causing some of the shifting of the plate.
Oh, I don't believe so. I don't think that's the bottom of things.
You don't think that's causing any of the earthquake problems we're having now?
Possibly, but we don't know everything, but I don't think that's the major one.
Yeah. So, also want to ask you how it was for you walking on the moon and whether you've had any experience in any UFO sightings or anything of that nature.
No, I have no first-hand experience with UFO sightings, but I think I almost lost you there. You still there?
Yes, I'm still there, thank goodness.
Something's going wrong with this. Okay. well, I've been pretty well briefed, and some of what I call the old-timers for the Roswell incident took it upon themselves before they passed on, even though they were under rather large penalties of security oath if they stopped. But as far as I know from their experience, and I tend to trust it, and I have been briefed, we've been visited and are continuing to be visited. And I think we're about to break open the cover-up that has been going on for some 60 years. It's about to run its course.
Mm-hmm. I thought that was probably the case. I've had Stan Friedman on my show, and he's stood up to him.
I just wrote the forward to Stan's new book.
Oh, did you?
It's just now coming out. We have to have
wonderful.
The same publisher. Yeah.
Oh, he's absolutely a brilliant person, too, like yourself, and he's stood up for his truth in so
he
long.
He certainly has. Stan has stood the test of time and is staying with it.
Oh, he's wonderful. And, you know, it's just so fascinating to think that happened. I remember someone that was a relative of mine who served in the Air Force confessed to me at a family gathering one time that this was all true, and that he said in passing that he wasn't allowed to talk about it. So I know
it's a no-no subject and has been, but there are those of us who have continued to speak out, and We'll get the veil lifted here, I think, before we're done.
Well, I mean, you know, I was never that interested in this, but it certainly comes up in the context of the space travel and all of this, and apparently there are some other species out there that we share with this grand universe, and so why wouldn't that be the case?
That is the main thing. It's the fact that probably the more important bit of news of our period in history is that we're not alone in the universe, and no one else before this time could really say that, or was it really a fundamental issue? But now that we're a spacefaring civilization, starting to be a spacefaring civilization, it becomes a high agenda item, and so here we are.
Yeah, I would think so, and I've studied the Project Camelot website extensively. Have you seen anything on Project Camelot?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear that.
Have you ever watched any of the programs that ProjectCamelot.org puts out?
I know of them, but I have not studied them.
Well, they had a three-part series given by Richard Hoagland, and he had some pictures of you on the moon.
Dick Hoagland and I don't get along very well.
I kind of assumed, because I thought his work was a little far out, but it is interesting, and they cover everything controversial.
Well, besides being far out, it's just wrong, so... Just
well, I mean, I wasn't going to, you know, get into all of that just in a way of passing, because they cover a lot of very interesting cover-ups on there, and some of it may be credible and some of it may not.
Yeah,
and, you know, you're in science, and you you're in the, you've been briefed and so on. But I thank you for sharing what you do know about that and standing up in your truth in all ways. And before we close out, I want to give out your title of the book, the website, and all of the websites.
Right. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
I really appreciate having you on. It was a great pleasure to speak with you, and you're a wonderful scholar and scientist, and just really a pioneer in many, many fields. So let me give out your website again. It's at www.edmitchellapollo14.com. And for the IONS website, which is the Noetic Sciences, you can go to
I have a new one also. We're just bringing up this call. It's more oriented toward the hard sciences and some of the things we're talking about. And it's called Quantrek.org, Quantrek.org. And
Quantrek.
I think your listeners will find some of that very interesting.
Quantrek.org. I'll definitely check that out. And Dr. Mitchell, I can't thank you enough. It was truly a real
been a
rare
pleasure being
honor
with you,
to
and,
speak with you.
We'll meet again.
Yes, we will. And
thank
we'd
you.
Like to close out. Thank you for joining us. We'd like to close out with another song, The Stars Still Shine, to honor our guest. And thank you again.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Mm-hmm. Bye now.